This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 22, Odd Man Out. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the sticky problem of the player whose face doesn't quite fit, but is still doing a job on the field. How do you deal with that? We also answer a couple of questions from listeners to the show. We have a leg spinner who seems to have lost everything. Can he get it back? And a deep philosophical question around where the downswing ends and the follow-through begins. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket. It's here for the next half an hour or so. We will help you improve your game. My name is David Hinchliff. I look after things here, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first of which is a man on his way to buy himself a Diet Coke, as far as I know. That's the last, where he was when I last left him anyway. It's the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
Yeah, I am. I'm on my way down. I'm about halfway through my journey, my usual journey on a Wednesday or whatever day of the week that we're doing this on. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that first sip.
That's the best one, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And second, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, got yourself a new watch.
I'm slightly off normal time. Yeah, it's well, there's a GPS kind of bubble in the area where there's a bit of a void, and sometimes it doesn't kind of stop working, but I think maybe it shifts things back 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, obviously that.
And since then, I've just been thinking about sausage rolls a lot, so I'd like to hear any news on sausage rolls would be welcome, because I'm getting hungry.
I think
it's on. It's on Dublin time, isn't it, your watch, unfortunately.
I think we should have a show that explains everything that happens before the show starts, so that people can understand what's going on. Yeah. But we're getting off the topic anyway, which is cricket, of course. And this week I wanted to talk about a subject which crosses many different teams at many different levels, and that is players who don't really fit in with the team. And in particular, I'm thinking about players who, for a variety of reasons, it's not necessarily one specific reason, but for a variety of possible reasons, a player can't quite, feels like their face doesn't fit in the side, but they're an important part of the side. Perhaps they're a good player, but they have different standards from the rest of the team. Like they don't, you know, they for example, they don't find fitness important, or they don't find arriving on time important, or they don't see it important as to have to be a good bloke, because, you know, as long as they're taking wickets and as long as they're scoring runs, they don't really care about, you know, what's happening with the rest of the team. And I'm sure we've all experienced players who are in that mindset in whatever way it is, and that's just three examples, but in whatever way it is, they don't fit in with the example of the rest of the team. How do you deal with players who are in that mindset and they don't, for one reason or another, they don't quite fit in with everybody else?
Well, it's a really good question. I don't think there's ever been a team of 11 individuals that's been put together where there hasn't been a bit of this.
Yeah.
And I think about all the sides and all the change rooms I've sat in over the years. You have that all the time. So some more volatile than others, some more public, I suppose, than others. But yeah, you definitely get that. And I suppose it comes down to tolerance levels, ultimately. And also an acceptance from everybody else in the room about what this person brings. And if you are tolerant, then you get a chance to be able to manage everybody else around that person a little bit more. And I've certainly been in sides where we've done that pretty well, where we've educated everybody else about the way that this person goes about their business. And if we were to attack them and to make them do things in the way that everybody else, what would be the pros and cons of that? So that's one approach that I've tried over the years. The other approach that I've seen, and obviously a pretty high profile one in the Peterson thing, is eventually England got to the stage where it was, right, you do what we say, otherwise you're out, irrespective of how good you are. That takes very strong management, and in most levels of a game, that probably wouldn't happen. Certainly in club cricket, I don't think that that happens too much. But at the top level of professional game, if you've got a very strong character in somebody like an Andrew Flower, going against another strong character in somebody like Kevin Peterson, then that could happen, because the organisation would get behind the coach, I should imagine, and support that. And that's ultimately pretty much what happened within the England state of affairs. But that's a rare thing in the club game, certainly in the schools game that I work at. It's more about tolerance, it's more about education, really.
And Evans, it is a challenge, isn't it, on the part of other people who see a player not fitting in with the culture and feeling like, oh, they're getting away with murder here, and I'm having to, I'm having to stick to the rules, and this is causing me a problem. Or actually, when you think about it, it shouldn't have any influence on you as a player if somebody else isn't quite fitting in, right?
Yeah, you can. It shouldn't necessarily impact on the performance of those around them, but you can see that frustration could come in, and ultimately, yeah. if one person gets a bit of a telling off for turning up late when this other guy is rocking up at 2 minutes before kickoff every week, then you can see that there are a few kind of mixed messages in there, and it can become very, very difficult. And it is about understanding each other and learning about the perspective of other people and why they do what they do and what they're trying to achieve from it, and also learning about the processes that are the things that are either being adhered to or not. So can we kind of work with both sides of the argument and try and make sure that the person who maybe is that isn't quite as kind of organized or as fitting in within the team environment as they could be. Maybe we can say, look, this isn't for the benefit of you necessarily, and I'm aware that you're doing what you're doing is to a particular standard, and your performance is of a level which is great. But if you do these processes, they may not benefit you, but they may actually benefit the team, because the team may feel that there's a better environment being created, or there's a bit more team unity, and that might have a spin-off effect that doesn't improve you but improves those around you. So you could speak to that individual, and equally, as Gareth has already mentioned, you need to have that learning process about for the rest of the guys about how they can deal with the individual concerned and why sometimes we have to be a bit more accepting of strengths and weaknesses of individuals that we play with, and it is a strength or a weakness, and in this case many will perceive it as a weakness. We all have weaknesses. I guess the idea is, can we be seen as trying to improve? And for some people, it's very easy to sort of do those right things, turn up on time, wear the right kit, all that kind of stuff. And for others, it's not. And they want to be seen to be different. And again, can we try and improve them a little bit day by day?
One good way to do that, I've found, is that rather than trying to change someone's character, because that's never, I mean, it's very rare that somebody changes their character. But what you can do is, say, for example, somebody, if the team standard is that you need to arrive in your training kit and train in your training kit, but this player never bothers to do that, then rather than say you need to change, say to that person, look, I know that you don't like to arrive in your training gear, and that's fine, you don't have to do that. But rather than being a person who arrives in their training gear, can you be a person who doesn't arrive in their training gear, and just make sure that you're wearing your training top, though, because that will help us out a little bit. You know, you're still keeping your unique individuality, but if you could keep your top on, then that'll help us all out. And then you're not focusing on the character of someone, which people can take as a criticism. You're focusing on the actions, which are much easier to change. The actions are a lot easier to change than characters.
The one area that I think is a difficult one for any team is lateness. And every team that I've been associated in the past, that's been the one that ultimately causes the most friction. And also, ironically, is the easiest one to sort out. And to me, lateness is a non-negotiable. There have been some other things that have reared their head. For example, I had Ian Blackwell, fantastic cricketer at Somerset. You know, big lad, not really into his fitness particularly. So I would let him not necessarily hit all of the markers that everybody else wanted to hit within their training programs. And somebody would inevitably say, well, why does he get away with it and I don't? And I said, well, that's fantastic, but in the middle of a season when we're playing tough cricket, if I don't pick him because he's not fit enough and we lose a couple of games, aren't you going to say we need Blackie back in the team? And ultimately, that was what it was. I said, you know, if you can tell me that you can do the same as him and still achieve the levels that you aspire to, then go for it. But of course, most of that lot couldn't. They needed to be fit. They needed to be at the peak of their powers in order to perform. Whereas Blackie, you know, could produce some unbelievable stuff, irrespective, really. And I did get around it a little bit. Instead of putting him in a gym, pushing weights and running on treadmills and all of that, I played badminton with him and squash with him and put a ball there. As soon as you stuck a ball in there, he was willing to do some work. And for the year that I had him, he was relatively trim. Never going to be massively trim, but he was relatively trim. But more importantly, he put in a monster shift for the side. Some unbelievable performances, won some trophies, got picked for England, and the job was a good one. So you can get around it. But ultimately, you know, if everybody else thinks that they can, you know, drop off their fitness and still perform at the levels that they aspire to, then yeah, go for it if you want. But of course they can't, because there's only very few players in the history of the game that have been able to do that.
Of course, we've talked about people who have a negative or can have a negative influence on a team who are trying to do positive things. But it can go the other way around. You can be playing in a team where you want to raise your standard, but you're playing in a team which is a lot more recreational, and it can be a lot less of a focus on things like fitness and turning up on time and all the rest of it. And then it can go the other way as well. So just because we're talking about one way of doing it doesn't necessarily mean there's only one way of doing it. Do you know what I mean? It can go the other way too. I'm sure if you're really intense on improving your game and becoming the best player that you can, but you're playing in a recreational side where, you know, they mostly care about getting the cricket out of the way so they can have a drink afterwards, that's going to be equally frustrating as well, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is, and I think that's most people that probably play the game, and most people who listen to this show. You know, they're people that, yes, they want to get better, but one of the big things that drew us all into the game wasn't just that we could achieve, it was because we were going to be doing it alongside some of our mates or some people that we wanted to associate with. And, you know, we can never get away from that, really. And the best teams generally are the ones that have some sort of connection other than just the cricket that they're playing. So you know, you've got to have those discussions, haven't you? If your team is a recreational team, then you don't want to stick down some rules and regulations that are going to demotivate people. You know, you've got to pitch it at the level that you aspire to and probably the level that you're playing at.
I think we've talked about it before, haven't we? But if as many of these kind of rules we have are to a degree player led, whether or not that is the players sitting down together and saying, right, this is what we're going to wear, this is what we're going to turn up, this is what we're going to do, etc., etc., or it's the captain and the vice captain in conjunction with the coach. So it could be one extreme or the other, but to some degree you want to involve players in these decisions, obviously depending on the level you're playing at, but especially in that sort of social recreation level, the players have got to be leading these things, and they've got to have some kind of dialogue between them, so they've agreed something previously, and at least then they've got something they can go back to and say, look, we did agree this, we had a reason for it, let's try and stick to it, and then if we need to review it next year or halfway through the season, then we'll review it then. But if they're putting things in place to start with, then it means that the things that you're going to be agreeing upon are probably a bit more realistic.
Okay, good. Let's finish this section with the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question. Plans are more important than techniques.
No.
No.
Second question. Dealing with rain delays is a skill.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. What players want isn't always what players need.
Yes.
Yes.
Let's head now into the mailbag. A couple of questions that have been sent in by the listeners to this very show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website. And we do our very best to answer those questions. And then at the end of the show, we pick a winner of the week, which gets a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to send in your question, you can do so by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, or you can get in touch with us in one of the other ways we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. But before we do that, we're going to get into the questions. And the first question is from Finn. And Finn is feeling a little frustrated at the moment. Finn says, I'm a 14-year-old leg spinner, and I have a problem bowling my stock leg break delivery. About 3 months ago, I could bowl a very good leg break with flight, dip, and big turn. And I was accurate and able to land it 9 times out of 10 on a perfect line and length. But recently it started to go downhill. One day I could bowl well and the next day I could not. I started bowling inaccurately and a bad length, often bowling short or bowling full tosses. I also lost a lot of turn and my action started to feel unnatural. It also feels like I might be bowling faster. It's got worse and worse and I can't seem to fix it. I haven't tried bowling many variations before except a top spinner and the occasional wrong one. I'm really desperate to get my bowling back.
Well, first thing I'm going to say is you need a bit of patience, bud. And the reason why I can say that is because you're going through a growth spurt. And if you can think about trying to do anything, then leg spin is a pretty tough task. And your limb lengths are changing all the time. You're going through your growth spurt, and you're finding it really difficult to connect with your kinesthetics, with your muscle memory, with repeating your action, because virtually every time you bowl there's something slightly different, and it's only a little bit each time, but it's something that you find very difficult to connect to. Now most spinners will go through this. I've certainly got two at school, one has just come out the other side of it, another one is just entering into it, and us as coaches have just got to be helping you to manage your own expectations, because it's unreasonable to expect all of these biological things to be going on in your system with limb lengths changing all the time and you to expect to be able to repeat your action consistently ball after ball and land the ball in the same areas that you were when you weren't growing. So that's my first bit of advice to you, is to just be patient and stick at it. I also think there is an opportunity here to work on other aspects of your game, and certainly from a fitness point of view, as we're going through this peak high velocity, there's a real good opportunity for us to load up on our aerobic capacity, because learning new skills or maintaining old ones is going to be really difficult, but being able to churn out miles and swimming long distances and cycling long distances and all of those things, we can really build our aerobic capacity during that phase where we're growing quite a lot. So there's an opportunity. It might be also an opportunity to say, I'm going to leave off the bowling a little bit, not practice quite so much as I have, and maybe practice another skill, say catching, or maybe getting your batting to do something slightly different. It's an opportunity to give those things a go, because bowling leg spin is a difficult task at the best of times, especially when your limb length's changing. So that'll be my starting point in managing your expectations through this ultimately very short period in your life where things are going to be moving and changing all the time. As soon as you start the plateau, then you're in business again and you can start building up, you'll reconnect with your action and things will start to work for you.
A lot of leggies, lavers do give up around this time, don't they?
Yeah, it does get difficult, and I think this is kind of one of the probably one of the bigger impacts that people sort of receive in their bowling, is that their body changes a little bit, and because of that it's also coinciding almost all the time with the ball changing. They go from small ball to big ball, and there's so much going on that it's very, very difficult, and I think everyone would agree that spin and leg spin in particular is such a high skill kind of discipline, that if you're moving, you're changing the ball you're using, going from a small one to a big one, your body's changing shape, it becomes so, so difficult. And on top of that, it's probably an area where looking at a lot of young cricket matches, more often than not, I would say the captain's pretty good at setting a field for a seamer, but a lot of the time you'll probably find that the support that that spinner needs from a field point of view and where they're positioning people and having a bit of cover and a bit of support in how that's set up, it probably isn't quite as strong as hopefully it will become in the next 2 or 3 years. So, and especially if someone's previously been performing to a really high level where they've been in control of their body and they've used the ball, they've been used to being to using over a period of time. So there are a lot of things working against you, and subsequently there can be a bit of drop out there. Again, it will come back to kind of that realism and being realistic and being aware of you are going to go through this patch, which isn't going to be the easiest part of your cricket career. But if you can stick at it, and Gareth has talked about this previously as well, and probably going back a few months, but use it as an opportunity to improve or refine some skills away from the main one you're thinking about. So look at it as a chance to improve somewhere else. And if you do that, you'll be out the other end before you know it, and suddenly you can get back to what you're doing. And the other way you can look at it as an opportunity as well is, and this is something we speak to a lot of our guys at school about, is that drop-off starts probably throughout most disciplines, rather than just the spinners. So if that drop-off's going to happen, can you be the one that holds on an extra year and see what happens? Can you keep holding on, and can you outlast the opposition? Because the people who keep working hardest and continue for the longest are invariably the ones that have the most success in the long run. So stick it out, be patient, as Gareth has said there, and hopefully when you're out the other side, you'll see that performance go through the roof again.
And of course, I suppose, as we've already said, in the meantime, there's that opportunity to become good at another skill and develop that great phrase, another string to your bow, which is an important thing for a spinner, isn't it? You know, if you can bat or field or bat and field, you're doing well, aren't you?
Yeah, an out-and-out spinner on their own has got to be pretty good in this day and age, because there are so many of them who are having that second skill or third skill and becoming kind of influential players at all moments of the game. So whether it's improving your batting, your fielding, your leadership on the field, your tactical input, whatever it might be, having something that backs up that primary skill is a really important thing, and it's something that makes you a more valuable asset to any team that you're part of.
And I guess going back to that original discussion that we had, you know, also being a guy who is, you know, prepared to help others and push other guys, give throwdowns and do things that you might turn up to nets and bowl terrible, but it doesn't mean you can't feed the bowling machine or hit balls up for people to catch or do many, many other things even if you feel like you don't want to bowl on that particular day. Next question is from Wakas. And Wakas has a simple question, but it's kind of follow up on something we've been talking about recently. He says, hit the ball on the downswing and not on the follow through. When does the downswing end and the follow through start? So I guess, Gareth, we maybe want to give a quick summary for anyone who's not up to speed on hitting on the downswing and not the follow through. And then maybe we can get into more detail on where the one begins and one ends.
Yeah, sure. It's a Gary Kirsten coaching phrase, actually, which I think is absolutely brilliant. That a lot of people, when they drive, and I think we see this all the way throughout every level of the game, actually, have a propensity when they see that fuller ball to want to go after it and make that contact point too far out in front of them, which obviously reduces their control, reduces their power, and reduces their hand speed, ultimately, as we've now discovered. But try and hit the ball on the downswing, which is ultimately going to take the ball into the ground rather than popping it up in the air to cover or to mid-off, as we see in all the levels of the game. Particularly prevalent when you're going from indoors to out, I think. The early season stuff is definitely comes into play, doesn't it, when people are popping those balls up, and on slow wickets as well. And as I walk through the rain here, the wicket that we're due to play on this afternoon is probably going to be a bit tacky and a bit slow. And as a result, a really good bit of coaching advice for this afternoon will be to make sure that they're concentrating on hitting the ball on the downswing so you can get that maximal power and control as a consequence of that technical bit of information. And I just love the simplicity of it, and certainly it's made a huge difference to the guys here at school following Gary's work, and then us other coaches being able to feed off of that and continue that language going forward. It's something that they've connected to really well. On the other side of it, what we've been able to do since is start to put sensors on bats and to work out when downswing ends and when follow-through starts. And ultimately, you know, what is the function of a follow-through? Well, the function of a follow-through ultimately is to decelerate the body. And when I say the body, I mean the arms and the hands predominantly. And then also to decrease the bat speed as well. So we come to a nice safe finish, whether that be with a full follow through or whether it be with a check follow through. You know, both of those are apparent. And what we see when we put these sensors on the bats is that you want to try and get your contact to be made at the maximum speed when you're driving the ball, maximum speed of your downswing, which often comes at the bottom of the arc. Then there is a really rapid deceleration phase, which happens normally post contact, but for the people that are playing the ball early, the people that are playing the ball out in front of them too far, they're often decelerating as they're going into contact, which as well as giving them less control is obviously going to reduce the impact of a ball off of the bat and the subsequent outcome in terms of pace off of the bat as well. So that's where we are. And going back to Wackers' question, where does the downswing end? Well, it ends really at the bottom of the swing of the bat, the bottom of that curve, I suppose, if we were to trace the toe end of the bat going through from the top of the backswing through to the end of the follow through, it would be towards the bottom of that curve from a visual point of view. But most importantly, it's the aim of it is to try and get the contact to be made at the bottom of a downswing before that bat gets beyond that point where you're going to be able to control it properly, and before we start to decelerate the bat face through the ball. And as soon as we start to decelerate that bat face through the ball, that is effectively our follow through.
Well, we try and talk about how we're swinging a bat, and the habit is quite a big part of our game. When we especially with a view to kind of power development and control, and inevitably once someone kind of gets to grips with the idea of how a bat accelerates and then how it rapidly decelerates, then I think their kind of investment in power, which for a lot of young guys is what they want, is something they really will try and achieve. One of the things that we try and do before matches is just try and have a little bit of preparation that is kind of curtailed towards the conditions. So if we can see visually or in any other way that the pitch is going to be quite slow, and it's usually pretty obvious if there's going to be a slightly slower pitch, then you can take that into your sort of preparation before the game. And if you're having some throwdowns, which we'll usually try and make sure we do prior to a game, then we'll make sure that all the throwdowns we do are kind of relevant to trying to allow us to play the ball that little bit later. So it might be that we're trying to bump that half volley back into the floor and up over the bowler's head or the thrower's head, or it might be that we're doing the stationary drill where you're not allowed to move your feet, which is forcing you to wait for the ball again and forcing you to allow the ball to travel. So just trying to transfer the idea and the fact that we've noticed something about the conditions and that it is slower and we do have to play the ball a little bit later and we do want to focus on downswing contact is something you can then just plan into your kind of match day routine and your general assessment of the pitch before you go out there. And there are obviously going to be days when you've got to adapt and you've got to do it in the middle and you've got to be able to kind of deal with instances as they're thrown at you. But if there are any that you can plan for and there are any that you can prepare for a little bit better, then it's obviously worth trying to incorporate that into your match day.
And do you find, Gareth, that that language of saying the downswing, not the follow through, is universal? It connects with most people most of the time?
I wouldn't say it's universal. I don't think any language is universal because of that individual preference that we speak about a lot. I think it's quite an easy analogy for people to grasp. Because, you know, most players, particularly when they've had some experience in the game, when they've been around it for any period of time, will understand the terminology around downswing and follow through. But particularly, as Sam said, focusing on that downswing really works. But it's just so simple. And I think often the best coaching messages are the most simple ones. And that's certainly what that's certainly what Gary has stumbled across there.
Yeah, being able to put something across simply in a way that's easily understood, but doesn't oversimplify it, is a really important way of communicating as a coach, isn't it? Because if you find you're over-explaining something, people can switch off from it, unless they're the type of person who likes everything to be explained in great detail. But if you're under-explaining as well, you know, if you're going into it. Not explaining enough that the message is going to get across, then that's also a waste of effort, just in a different way.
Well, often it's about painting a picture in their heads, isn't it? Because most of the time when we're working with people, it's quite a short period of time. But if there's a simple analogy which paints a very clear picture in their head, then it gives them the capacity to keep thinking about that and keep executing that away from you as well. And as we've talked about in previous weeks, you know, it's often that work that people put in either mentally or physically away from the sessions that you run, which is a determining factor between whether they really kick on or whether they just move at the normal rate.
Coming up now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, it's the Soapbox. That's a minute on the clock and an uninterrupted chat from one of the members of the team. This week it's Mark Garraway. So, Gareth, over to you.
Yeah, it's putting the individual first, really. I mean, I'm in an environment now which is about really generating as many opportunities as possible for any of the boys and girls to play as much cricket as high a level as they want to. So we've got a policy here at school where if a county game clashes with a school game, then the only thing that we will do is let them go. The only exception to that is if there's a National Cup game where they'll stay with us. And that works with our players that are playing second 11 cricket, some guys that have gone into first class environments while still here, as well as some of the under 11s, 12s, 13s, 14s, all the way up, both boys and girls. So as much as we can do, we make that happen. And that's not always the case. And I would really plead to clubs and schools to have a real think about what they're there for, what's their purpose, how they're trying to support their players, and see if that policy that we've got here is something that can be superimposed elsewhere too.
And that is the end of the show for another week. Before we go, we are going to decide on the winner of this week's competition, of course. That is the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions were Finn's question about losing his leg spin and Wacko's question about where the downswing ends and the follow-through begins. A deep philosophical question, if I ever heard one. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with the leg spin question. I thought it was a cracker, and not just because it was leg spin, and we do love leg spin on this show, but more importantly because so many of the people that are either listening to this or the coaches that listen to this that are working with young players are going to go through these phases with players where they are going through a massive growth spurt, and it's really important that we support them. We support them with a bit of science and a bit of research behind us, and we can manage their expectations because it can be a really frustrating time.
Fantastic. Well, I hope the online coaching course can help Finn through that particular problematic area. And Gareth, if someone else was listening to the show and they wanted to get in touch with us and they also wanted to get their question answered and maybe win the prize, how could they get in touch?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Social media, as I mentioned before, is also available to you. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can also subscribe to the show. You can do that by going to your favourite podcast app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy in there, and clicking or tapping on the subscribe button, and the show will be delivered to you every Friday. And if you want to get the show notes, or you want to download the show directly, or you want to go through the archive of all the old shows, or just generally have a hunt around in a place where cricket goes on 24/7, then you can go to the Pitch Vision Academy website, pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link for all the old shows, as well as this current one. And that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, guys.